No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or you can Skype questions in to BBS Radio 1. Tonight we have an important guest, Leonie Hamilton. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Leonie Hamilton, thank you. A well-known New York City education advocate who will tell us what's going on in New York City schools and why we need to be concerned about student privacy. So I hope you call in and join the conversation. Again, the number is 888-628-6008 or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. Before I get started, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen, who was also an advocate for New York City schools children until she flew the coop and headed back west. She is currently halfway back to Arizona, somewhere in the Midwest. Kathleen, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you, Senator Brown. Kansas. I'm in Kansas right now, kind of on my way, yes, to Arizona.
Now that we're on to the Midwest, we have to thank Senator Clara McCaskill from Missouri, the next state over, for becoming a co-sponsor of the New Columbia Emissions Act, S-1688, in the Senate, which would make the District of Columbia state, bringing the number of current Senate co-sponsors to 18. And Kathleen, can you tell me what Senator McCaskill has in common with the other 138 co-sponsors of the bill?
She believes in privacy. I don't know. She's a Democrat?
She is. She's a Democrat.
There we go.
One of you Republicans going to get the message, man. It's time for one of you to get on the bill. In addition to that, DC TAG has come under attack in the Senate. And the DC TAG program gives money for college tuition for anybody from the District of Columbia who goes to a state school, and it's more than doubled the enrollment in college for kids from D.C., especially poor kids. So if you want to call 224-3121, 202-224-3121, and ask for Thad Cochran. Senator Cochran is chairman of the Appropriations Committee. Tell him to keep the money in for TAG. We really need it. It's a great program, and they're talking about cutting $10 to $20 million out of it, which is ridiculous. They should increase it. And one last thing before I let Kathleen introduce our guest, we give a shout-out to Bonnie Gillespie, who's a longtime listener of the show and a old dear friend. Today's Bonnie's birthday, so happy birthday, Bonnie. If you're out there somewhere, we hope you're listening. Kathleen, you've got the floor.
Okay, that's amazing that you gave it to me, but I'm really excited. As you know, Leonie Hamilton has joined us before. She's the executive director of Class Size Matters, a nonprofit parent advocacy group working for smaller class sizes in New York City as well as the whole nation. The New York Times has called her the city's leading proponent of smaller classes, and she is. I actually got to know Leonie because my son was in a really large class size and had to take the test on the floor, and he came home one day and he said, you know, I don't think it's fair that some kids get the desk and some kids have to do their test on the floor. And then that became my involvement in Class Size Matters. She's also, Lainey's a public school parent for 15 years, is now a board member of the Network for Public Education, the national organization started by Diane Ravitch in 2013. Recently, she spearheaded the battle against states and districts disclosing personal student information to a corporation called InBloom Inc., and through InBloom with for-profit vendors without parental consent. Now, Lainey has, you know, she's graduate of Harvard University. She's worked as a parent advocate at the Educational Priorities Panel and started Class Size Matters in 2000. She speaks before parent, community, and governmental groups and has appeared on every, you know, TV station. And she's just incredible as far as being a proponent for children and parents. And welcome, Lainey, to Shadow Politics. I'm really excited to talk to you about this whole issue of student privacy.
Well, thank you for asking me to be on your show.
Well, thank you. And, you know, most parents are so caught up, I think, in the Common Core issue and what that's doing to their students and the high-stakes testing. I don't think that they have a clue of all this other stuff that you've kind of uncovered. Could you kind of tell the listening audience what the issue is with student privacy?
So many parents are unaware that their schools and districts are sharing the personal student data of their children with a wide variety of third parties, including companies, without any real restrictions on their use of the information and very lax security procedures. So that could include your child's name, address, phone number, your name and address, as well as very sensitive information like their test scores, their grades, their disciplinary records, their disabilities, their health information. All of that is being collected often by schools and then handed off to third parties for various reasons. At the same time, schools and districts are contracting with companies that are essentially creating online programs that your child is assigned to at school or to use at home. And those companies are directly connecting a huge amount of personal information from your child, often with very few restrictions or security protections. And so we're very concerned about how that information could be used to damage your child's future or to possibly breach onto the internet and really, you know, affect their long-term possibility for success. And we got involved in this a few years ago when we found that all the personal information of public school students in the state of New York was going to be shared with a company called InBloom Inc., which was also collecting information from eight other states. And because of parent protests, all the states pulled out, and InBloom closed its doors in April 2014. But that whole controversy really made parents aware for the first time about how much personal detailed information was being collected and shared for their children with various corporations and other third parties. And it kick-started a debate on student privacy, which really went nationwide. And in the last 2 years, more than 40 states have passed laws concerning student privacy. Now there are five bills that have been introduced in Congress in the last few months. And it really is a very hot issue across the country and an important issue across the country, because there are things in our child's records, and there are things that corporations are collecting without our knowledge or consent and handing off in very insecure ways. We've seen massive breaches, both for corporations and now at the federal level. Hundreds of schools and districts have suffered breaches of very, very sensitive student information as well, and they're being shared, disclosed, and stored in ways that are unsafe.
Well, you know, Lainey, I was a direct mail consultant for 25 years, and I used to buy information from list brokers, and I was always amazed at how much information was out there. Now, I don't know very much about how much is out there for children, because that was never something that we were interested in. We did political fundraising, so we were interested in party affiliation and people over 60 years old. But I was always amazed at the amount of information that was available for sale.
That information has multiplied over the last few years because of the internet and because of computer capability of gathering and storing huge amounts of data on almost every single individual who's ever gone online. And just in the last month or so, Pearson owned a company called PowerSchool, which was a student information system that collected the data of, I think, 15 million students worldwide. And that company now has been sold to a private equity company called Vista Equity Partners for $350 million. So you can see that these companies are collecting information and then selling the information to other companies with really very few restrictions, and it's very, very scary.
PowerSchool was the one that was on advertising, helping you find the right college for yourself, right? And you'd go on and put all your what you want to learn and all that. Is that that's the one, right?
Well, PowerSchool was also used as the student information system for many, many schools where they stored student data. So, yeah, and in fact, College Board and ACT sells student data to colleges all the time. And recently it was revealed that without telling parents, ACT was not just collecting information from your child, but then putting it through an algorithm and selling the algorithm to colleges to tell them which students would likely to be successful in those colleges. So they were asking parents and then asking students sometimes who actually go online and sign up for the ACT, all this kind of information, including their grades, et cetera, and then putting that through a formula and then selling that information to colleges without telling people that that's what they were doing. And obviously that would affect your child's admissions to colleges.
Does this primarily happen for secondary school students, or do we need to worry about elementary school students as well? Is this stuff
going
on?
It happens to all students. As soon as your child registers in a public school, generally speaking, that data then becomes available to third parties. In terms of busing, busing companies get that information. Student information services where they hold that information in a cloud, attendance information, in many, many districts and schools contract with third parties. And then there are teachers that go online and contract with third parties for various kinds of behavioral programs. There's one that's, now I've forgotten the name of it, but my child's school didn't use it, but many, many schools use it. And teachers collect all the infractions that the child goes, and they get demerits. And that goes on a cloud, and then it gets shared among all sorts of parties. So it really is a very, very precarious situation. And in many schools, they have data walls now where your child's grades and test scores will be put on the wall, supposedly in the hallway or in the principal's office. And that's a violation of the federal privacy, but that's being widely done. So in the effort of providing more and more data, supposedly to schools, supposedly to research establishments and testing companies and whatever, we're putting children's futures at risk.
And who's responsible for policing this? Is that responsibility a state responsibility? Is it a federal responsibility, or is nobody doing it?
Nobody's doing it. So what happened is that we had a fairly strong federal privacy law called FERPA that was passed in the 1970s. That was a bipartisan bill, which basically said that parents had the right to notification and consent before their children's personal information was handed off by their school or district. And then over the last 10 or 12 years, FERPA has been rewritten by the Department of Education to basically eviscerate it, to allow schools and districts to hand off to third parties for anything, any of a variety of reasons, for operational reasons, for research reasons, for evaluation reasons, for testing reasons. And so nobody's really been as the capabilities of schools and districts has multiplied for data sharing and vendors for data collection, the federal privacy law has been weakened. And so nobody's looking out for this. There are basically no security protections for data, and there's very little protections in terms of even making parents aware of what's going on and asking for their consent or allowing them to opt out. There are certain provisions like COPPA, which is an Children's Online Protection Act, which is a federal law, which says that if your child's information, your child is under 13 and a third-party vendor is gathering their data either in school or at home, you have to be notified and you can opt out of that. However, parents are not being notified about it, and right. They do not know that they can opt out of it, and so they're not. And so basically there's a loophole between FERPA and COPPA. It's all very complicated, but nobody's really taking responsibility to telling parents about this and letting them know either what their rights are under existing federal law or what they should be demanding in terms of best practices from their schools or districts.
So to anybody who right now has a child 13 and under in a public school, because I guess this doesn't apply to charter schools, right?
It should apply to private charter schools. If any school gets federal funds, it should apply to them.
It should apply to them. That parent should go, do they go online? And it's called COPPA. That's the Congress enacted.
It's the Children's Online Protection Privacy Act.
Right.
And we have a website. We have a coalition called Parent Coalition for Student Privacy, and our website is Student Privacy Matters. And on that website are privacy resources, including fact sheets about what rights you have and what best practices you should be demanding. So you can go on there and look at what your rights are under COPPA. But you do have the right to be notified if your child is being assigned online programs, going directly online and giving up their personal information either in school or at home, and your child is under 13, you have the right to be notified and to see the data and opt out of further collection of the data.
Wow. And, you know, for everybody that has a child now who has an iPad instead of books, and then they have to go online, right, and register. You register with several different things. So all that information could be gathered by them following what your son or daughter is putting in as their homework or whatever the programs you say that they have to sign on to through their curriculum, right?
Right. And they are gathering your child's information and accumulating millions of bits of their responses, et cetera, et cetera. Google, with Google Applications for Education, was accused of scanning kids' emails and then doing targeting advertisements to them. There's a lot of abuses of student information that we know about already.
Oh, I'm sure that's absolutely true. First, one technical note, folks. My Cracker Jack co-host noticed that I gave out the call-in number is 888-627-6008 and also 628. But the number is 888-627-6008 if you want to call in. Or BBS Radio 1 if you want to Skype. But, yeah, that's got to be absolutely true. As somebody that I really worked in the political arena more than the commercial arena, but, you know, data mining, even for an old geezer like me that goes back 25 years, that was a very important part of what we did in analysis and trying to come up with targeting. And I'm sure a lot of that's going on. And there are countries, I believe Sweden is one, where you're not even allowed to advertise to children because it's seen as something that can be so detrimental. So this is certainly something that we need to be concerned about. And let me ask you, since you're on the subject of the Parent Coalition for Student Privacy, your website – Look, you want to talk for a minute about the five principles that you guys put up to protect student privacy? Because I think this is important that people know this.
So we tried to simplify what we need out of any data sharing agreement that your school or district may engage in. And we've tried to hone it down to five principles. One of them is transparency, that parents must be notified by their school or district in advance of disclosing this information to any third parties, and that the contracts and the privacy policies of these companies should be available to parents and provide a date certain by which the data will be destroyed after the contract lapses. We want absolutely no commercial uses. Right now, there are five bills in Congress. Only two of them, I think, ban targeted advertising completely or data mining the data to use for ads to children. So we think that there should be no advertising whatsoever on programs, online programs that are assigned to your kids at school, and they should not use the data to either develop or market their products. Security protections are incredibly important. We need to protect against breaches, and a lot of the time this data is held in very insecure ways, either directly by schools and districts or by the third parties. So we believe that there must be encryption, there must be training, there must be security audits and audit logs, and passwords need to be protected in the same manner as the personal data, as well as notification to parents of all breaches. Parent and student rights. We believe that absolutely no vendor should be allowed to redisclose to any other third parties without parental notification and consent. And for very sensitive data, parents should have to give their consent before this data is shared. And then finally, enforcement. Without enforcement, no law is going to be actually complied with. And this is one of the areas that we think a lot of the bills are very, very weak on. So the law should specify fines if the school district or the vendor violates the law or their contracts or privacy policies. And we believe that parents should be able to sue on behalf of their children's rights as well. When there was a court decision that said that even though FERPA, when it was a strong federal privacy law, the court decided that parents could not sue on behalf of their children. The only thing that could be done is that the federal government could withhold funds if schools or districts violated parent privacy, student privacy, and that has never, ever been done, to my knowledge. So the federal government has never stepped in to fine a school for violating student privacy. So we need all those five principles in any strong, robust privacy bill.
And would you leave it to the federal government to enforce, or the local government, or would you do you think it that both entities need to be involved in this?
So we believe there need to be strong federal privacy protections, because we've seen many different bills at the state level, but none of them are strong enough, and none of them really will individually protect students across the board. And what's interesting is even some of the vendors and the ed tech companies think that there should be a uniform law across the country, because they don't want to have to then comply with 50 different laws in every right. single state. And because these companies market their products across the entire country, we don't want a situation in which parents in one particular state has have certain rights that parents and students in one another state don't have rights. And it's very, very, it's already a very complicated, complicated issue, and we don't want to make it even more complex by having to explain to parents in every different state what their rights are.
Well, you know, one of the things that I was reading on, you know, it says parents have the right of written consent before their children are required to participate in any federally funded survey, analysis, or evaluation dealing with information concerning their political affiliation, the mental and psychological problems if they have any in the family, religious affiliation, sex behavior, and attitudes. And I remember hearing, and maybe I'm just imagining this, but I remember hearing that there was something that was taken in a class survey survey or something where questions were asked, does your mom love your dad or something like that? Do you know what I'm speaking about, Lainey? It was
I don't know what specifically you're speaking about, but there have been many, many intrusive surveys over the years in schools. And then there are other surveys that ask about kids' drug habits or sexual habits. And basically, there was another law passed by the federal government called the PPRA, or the Personal Pupil Rights Act. And that basically said that if a school or district is going to ask your child questions about highly sensitive information, parents have the right to be notified and to opt out in advance. And if the survey is being funded by the federal government, you have the right to consent, which is even a stronger right, because often parents are notified in ways that, you know, that they don't pay attention, or the district, you know, just sends home a piece of paper which never leaves the kid's backpack. So really we believe in the right of parental consent. And yet often schools and districts are not really complying with that law. So we hear all the time about surveys that are very, very sensitive, that ask about things like, your child's your family life, details of your family life that should remain private, et cetera, et cetera, and that parents are not being told in advance and being allowed to opt out of these things.
Am I wrong, or are the surveys that deal with issues like sex and drugs, aren't they supposed to be anonymous? Do they actually, can they connect that information with students? You know, I'm someone who's gone through a lot of backpacks in my day and pulled out things that I couldn't believe, including previous lunches that I couldn't even identify. So I know that giving your kid a slip and taking it home, you know, it's more likely to end up, you know, as part of compost than it is in your hands. But aren't those things where we ask kids about sex and drugs, aren't those anonymous?
They're supposed to be anonymous, yes, but you have no idea, you know, when the school is collecting the information, how anonymous they're going to end up being. Uh-huh. And what other details about your child's life that could identify them. For example, if they're asking your child, you know, your name, your ethnicity, your birth date, your grade, all those things, the neighborhood, zip code. If you have all that information, it's often very easy to identify a child just from one or two pieces of data like that.
And, you know, I see her because I think every parent knows that their kid through some time in their school life has acted out, you know, or has, you know, heaven forbid. I remember when Diego was fooling around and pulled kids' pants down, you know, and it was awful. I mean, you get that kind of stuff where you show, okay, he did this when he was maybe in kindergarten, and maybe he tried to kiss a girl when he was in third grade. If they're able to see all this, they can just come to conclusions, right, without it being really something that is, you know, you don't know what that kid, maybe he did get therapy, or maybe he just grew out of it, or maybe he's okay. But if they can collect that stuff, that can follow you, and you don't even know what's following you, right? I mean, that's where it's coming to.
I mean, it is very, very, very scary for most parents that these things go on your child's permanent record. Now there are these things called data dashboards in many schools where with a stroke of, a tap at a keyboard, a teacher can see a child's disciplinary and academic record going back to the age of 5. And what we're very afraid of is kids will be profiled and stereotyped. There's a lot of research that shows that if teachers have negative or positive information about a kid before they meet them, that can then help determine their attitude and actually help determine whether that child is successful in school or not. And so we're very afraid of how this information is used even within the school context. And often in the past, these things have gone in your child's paper file and has never been seen by anyone except for possibly the guidance counselor if your child got in trouble again. But now this can be data that can track and follow your child through life. And it is very, very scary. Also, disciplinary records, you know, if your child gets arrested for something as a minor, often that goes becomes an enclosed record and then ends up being destroyed if your child does not get in trouble again. These things can go in your child's record and literally never get destroyed. But one thing, parents do have the right still under federal law to know what's in your child's record if it's being held at the school level. You still have the right under FERPA to demand to see what is being collected at the school level, what is being stored there, and to correct it if it's wrong or at least challenge it. So I would recommend that every parent ask their child's principal to see every single bit of data and information in your child's record to make sure that it's accurate and even to challenge it if it's inaccurate.
Wow. Well, I think that's really important because as someone, and I think we've all had this experience somewhere along the line where something on a credit report gets screwed up or something in another data file gets screwed up, and we know how hard it is to correct that. It's way harder to correct something than it is to put it in originally. And I think we've all been through that. I think that's really, really important.
And think about it also, I was just thinking over the years with Diego, every kid is going to get in some kind of, problem, or they get in one year a teacher that just doesn't like them. And, they don't respond to the teacher doesn't respond to them. There are cases when the teachers are great, but a teacher can put a lot of stuff into that record that you don't know about. I think the biggest eye-opener, I was sitting here thinking, I wish I had looked at Diego's file when he left as a senior, but, it makes me question what's going on with Mateo, who's going to be a junior, and I'm going to ask the next time, what to see his record, which is my right? I can
absolutely
go in and say.
Absolutely, it is your right. It is your right to see what's in your child's record if it's being held by the school. Unfortunately, more and more data is being collected by vendors, outside
of
school.
And then what do you do?
And that you have the right to see, but only if your child has entered in directly their information into the third party's hands and your child is under 13.
Wow.
So you have limitations on the right to see that information. Some of these bills are trying to deal with that as well. Because you have fewer rights when, even if the school assigns the program to your kid, if it goes into their hands and not the school's hand, then it no longer is formally part of their education record and you have no right to see it.
Oh my gosh.
And where do the federal bills stand at this particular point? Are there bills pending in Congress in both houses?
Yes, there are. There are five bills pending in both houses of Congress. They've all been introduced in the past 3 months or so. There are two bills in the Senate and there are three bills in the Senate and two bills in the House. And they're very different, each of them, and none of them, in our eyes, is perfect. The latest one that was just introduced last week in the House by Rakita, Fudge, Klein, and Scott looks like it has the best chance of passing, though we would like it to be improved. And it's one of the stronger bills, though it still doesn't give enough transparency, enough parental rights, and enough enforcement. But the good thing about it is that it covers both third parties and schools, and it bans all advertising, which none of the other bills do. So that's a big step forward. Some of the bills that were introduced by Senator Blumenthal and Daines and Representatives Messer and Polis portray themselves as banning all advertising, but it says it allows targeted and contextual advertising as long as that's based on data mined during each individual session of a child's online usage. But that's not enough. But the latest House bill seems to. All these bills have some bipartisan support, which is good. The good thing about the student privacy issue that we've realized over working on this in the last few years is that parents cared hugely about this, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican or have no party affiliation at all. And that's why we were able to defeat InBloom, and that's why we were able to pass a law in the New York State legislature against against InBloom because it is a hugely bipartisan issue.
Is InBloom isn't part of Bloomberg by any way, is it?
No, InBloom was originally an $100 million project of the Gates Foundation that then was spun off into a separate corporation. It had no specific connection with Bloomberg, though the operating system was built by Wireless Generation, which is owned by News Corporation, which is run by Joel Klein, our former chancellor, and owned by Rupert Murdoch.
Jeez, that's crazy. Wow. I mean, I can see all the connection there, knowing Joel Klein and being involved in, you know, in New York City educational stuff. That's amazing. I'm sorry, Senator Brown. Go ahead.
That's okay. I just want to ask you, do we have either a short title or a bill number for the fudge bill that we can ask people to support? Do you know a bill number?
All right. So the title of the Rokita fudge bill, and again, we don't support it as is, but right now it looks like, you know, it's our best chance to get something good passed. I'm looking at the bill now, and I don't see a number on it. So I can, you know, but it is called the, what is it called? It's called the Student Privacy Protection Act.
Okay.
Now, maybe the reason it doesn't have a bill number is because online, the online version
doesn't have a number, but it's Congress.
See if I can find the bill number, but maybe it hasn't been.
Well, that's okay. We just
formally,
want to put it
but
out
it is,
there.
It is the that main is bill from the House now, and Rokita and Fudge are the co-chairs of the K-12 House Committee inside the larger Education Committee.
Okay.
And it's co-sponsored by Klein and Scott, who are the co-chairs of the larger committee. So we're hoping that that bill will get strengthened along the way, and there'll be a companion bill in the Senate that will be even stronger.
Well, so people out there, you know, we're constantly telling you, 202-224-3121, call in and say that you want to see this bill strengthened and you want to see it passed. It's the Student Private Protection Act. We're going to take a short break and play a song in honor of our guest today. And when we get back, we'd like to talk to you about some more things like the Common Core and
high-stakes testing.
High-stakes testing. Okay, we'll be back in a minute. Here's something from Pearl Jam. Just saying during the break how much we believed in public education. And, you know, all my kids have gone through public schools. I know your kids have gone through public schools as well, Kathleen. Lenny, I assume yours have gone through public schools. And, you know, I grew up in North New Jersey at the worst time in the history of North New Jersey. But we had great public schools. And it's scary to see people withdrawing and going into charter schools and going into homeschooling. So what do you think about this trend, Lainey, of charter schools and homeschooling? This is really hurting in the public school system, is it not?
Absolutely, it's hurting. It's taking resources and support away from our public schools. It's creating more segregation. It's creating more inequities across the system. And it's essentially undemocratic because charter schools are run, they get public funds, but they are run by private corporations, and so they're not under the democratically control of school boards. And often they have very abusive disciplinary policies and have high suspension and expulsion rates, and often do not enroll their fair share of high-need students, including English language learners and special needs kids. And so what's happening over time is our public schools are getting more and more concentrated with the highest need kids with fewer resources to deal with them. And so I think it's a very unfortunate development. And I think we need to support our public schools, and we need to make sure that they have the resources and the smaller class sizes and the well-rounded education that every parent wants for their child. But unfortunately, state and federal policies have been moving in the opposite direction.
Well, let's come around to what's going on with Common Core. It seems like what I pick up is that more and more states are really kind of like, you know, kind of standing up and not wanting Common Core. Would that be a correct assertion?
Yeah, it is true that more and more states are pulling out of the Common Core. The latest, I think, is New Jersey. The Governor Christie said that he believed that the state should pull out of the Common Core, and it's certainly a trend that's happening across the country. At the same time, more and more states are also pushing out of the Common Core tests, especially the PARC exam, because it's been a disaster in many states. And it's also related to the whole data privacy issue, because the PARC, which is this consortium, a private company where a consortium of states are participating, and the Smarter Balance take your child's data, often very, very, very sensitive data, and are going to themselves share it with third parties without parental knowledge and consent. We finally got a copy of the PARC privacy policy, and it was very weak, and Smarter Balance won't even give out their privacy policy to parents. So at the same time as these centralized curriculum testing companies are gathering more and more information about your child, the data that they are accumulating is no longer under your control.
It's almost like it sounds like a conspiracy to kind of ruin the United States, because I've always thought that the public school system, and even in Douglas, you know, it kind of created it was that feeling that, you know, if you worked hard, studied hard, think outside of the box, you know, it was a system that seemed to create creativity and hard work, and now it just seems to be the opposite, and there's so many parents that are so disturbed with what's going on with the tests that their kids are taking and the way they're learning, and the fact that the parents no longer can really kind of help their kids with their homework, which helped you learn what your kids were doing, because now everything's on an iPad, they don't bring books home, and it's really, really difficult for a parent to become involved in what they're learning or know what they're learning.
It's true. It's true. You know, it's hard for a parent to even be able to log into the system to see what your child's homework looks like, and no less see it corrected, because it may never be come back in printed form. And we have students that have protested the fact that the laptops that they're given in school are collecting all their data and watching them all the time, and teachers and administrators have access to their laptop use, and then when they try to bring in their own laptops to school, they are no longer given access to the same materials. So they're really penalized in that way. And well, so this whole mechanization of education is more and more through the testing and through the instruction, treating children like data points to be surveilled and dehumanized. I think they call it personalized education, but I think it's depersonalized education. And it really is taking the personal relationship between your child and your child's teacher out of the equation.
Well, you know, I've got to agree with you 100% on that. And that's something that really scares me, is how these technologies are reinforcing each other. And I think they're killing creativity and innovation in America, something that our country has always been famous for. But I see that we have a caller on line 4, Mia from Kansas, Maya from Kansas. Maya, are you there?
Yes, I am, actually.
Do you have a question?
Yeah, and a comment, actually. I guess I'm trying to find out how many people are aware of the participation of governors or people like Bobby Jindal, who initially started out for Common Core and then pulled out when parents started fighting it.
Lainey, do you know the answer?
Yeah, they're quite. I mean, that happened with Chris Christie too of New Jersey. Several governors have changed positions on Common Core as it's become more and more politically unpopular to be supportive of it. But I think that it still hasn't had its full effect, and that there will be even more governors pulling out, hopefully, in the future as the ramifications of all this become more clear, and more governors pulling out of the really onerous testing that's invaded our schools and taken over our schools, all in the name of accountability, but really at the same time, I think, undermining the quality of education in many, many kids' schools.
I guess my concern about it has been that, number one, it would appear that Common Core has actually been around and in many ways has already implemented in a lot of programs that have just changed their names.
That's true. That's one thing that governors and state education departments are doing. Like in Florida, they've changed the name to Florida State Standards or Indiana State Standards and changed a few minor things about the Common Core, but not really looked at the Common Core as a whole and made fundamental changes to it, which I think are needed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you very much.
No, thanks for calling in, Maya. Thanks for listening. Mm-hmm.
So, Lainey, what do you say to parents? I mean, we have about 5 or 6 more minutes left, but I want to make sure that parents don't feel overwhelmed because, you know, you sit here and you listen to, you know, all the big corporations involved in Common Core and in this marketing and the curriculum of your kids, and, you know, it almost seems like you just don't know what to do. What would be your 3 or 4 steps you would say to parents that they need to do if their kids are in public schools?
So I would go online to our website, Student Privacy Matters, check out what your rights are under existing federal law, sign up for our newsletter. We also have a petition that's linked to from our website to Congress where you can go online and send a message to your congressperson and senator saying you want these 5 principles upheld in any legislation that's passed, and really do demand from your school, first your principal and then your superintendent and then your school board, that you be notified and you know what's in your what data points are being shared with what third parties for what reasons. And if these are data that you do not believe should be shared, then make a fuss. Make a fuss at the school, your district level, and with your school board, because the good thing about most school districts across the country is that you still have elected school boards. And mostly, they are going to be sensitive to this issue if enough parents complain about it. So we do believe that we still have some modicum of democracy in this country at the local level in terms of your local school board. Another good thing that's happening right now in the Congress is that they are rewriting NCLB, and they're taking away a lot of the power of the federal government to prescribe Common Core standards, teacher evaluation through test scores, and any particular set of tests. And so the federal government is going to be moving out of this arena over time. And so that means your state and your district is going to have more flexibility and be able to pull out of the Common Core without any kind of facing any federal penalties. And that's a good thing, too.
Well, and, you know, we can't overstate how important it is for you to connect with your local politicians on issues like this. First of all, this is what our show's about, is to get issues like this out there. And secondly, the only thing, these people only respond to pressure that comes from the outside. They don't create things inside the building. They respond to pressure that comes to them from outside. So it's so important that you do exactly what Lainey said, and and contact your local school board about issues like this. Kathleen, I'm going to let you have the last word.
We're almost
out of time here.
I know, and Lainey, thank you so much. I mean, we didn't even talk about class sizes, which is such a big deal. We didn't even get to talk. I mean, there was a. I was going to ask you about the principal that from a charter school in New York that committed suicide, threw herself in front of the tracks because of the test scores.
This was a public school. This was a public school, not a charter school. Unfortunately,
it was a public school.
We just found out about it. I mean, we knew that this principal died mysteriously. We didn't know that she actually committed suicide the day of the third grade Common Core exams, where apparently she'd been involved in some cheating scandal, but we don't know the details of this. And I hate to say that, because now that she's dead, I mean, they're going to be blaming possibly things on her that she has no right to defend herself. But it is really tragic how a lot of people's lives are being ruined, whether it's children, teachers, administrators, by the obsession with testing that's going on in our schools, and that has got to stop.
Wow, with that, I mean, that's a very strong and very powerful message. And I think the biggest thing is parents have got to stay involved. They've got to go to their PTA meetings. They've got to be involved in the schools. You can't just let the government and the school system do it for you. You've got to be there for your kid. And Lainey, I hope you'll come back and we'll try to narrow it again down, because there's just so many things to talk about in education, and you're so involved in so many things. Thank you for doing this, because I know you were the one that was uncovering this trend, and you've done so many good things for kids in education, and I can't thank you enough for hanging in there and fighting the good fight, because that's what you do.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me, and I'm happy to come on anytime.
Great.
Well,
thank you, Lainey.
We're happy to have you, and, you know, as Kathleen said, we appreciate the great work you're doing on behalf of school children, and again, folks, it's Student Privacy Matters. Go to their website, sign up, get involved. We have, unfortunately, we have a caller online too, Lynn, but we didn't get a chance to get around to you, Lynn. I'm sorry we're out of time. Please call back at another time. And thanks, America, for listening.
Give the people their right to vote.